What's up, everyone? Welcome back to the Dive Bomb Squadcast. We've got episode 82 coming at you, and I'm a little sweaty this morning because right before I hopped on here, one of my cows got out in the roads. So you see me wiping some forehead sweat off. I was wrangling a heifer to get back in here. But today we have the director of marketing for Browning, Rafe Nielsen, on today, man. How are you doing?
Good. How are you doing? Other than not wrangling cows.
Other than sweating like crazy, hopping in the studio this morning. That's good. He just got back from Alaska. I've been doing some crazy stuff. How was that trip, man? I saw a few things. You were up there with Sidney Wells. That looked freaking awesome, dude.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun. We took the 20-gauge A5s up there, did a little ptarmigan hunting. And yeah, it's a little weird to travel all the way up to Alaska just for birds. I mean, Typically you're going up there to try to kill a caribou or moose or bear or something, right? But
Absolutely.
It's a long ways to go for a ptarmigan hunt. But we had a lot of fun. It was well worth the trip. I did something similar last year as well and had a lot of fun. So we duplicated again this year.
Yeah, that sounds like a ton of fun. I've watched a bunch of YouTube videos on ptarmigan hunting. I've always wanted to do it. And I'm in Washington, so I'm only like a couple hour flight away from Alaska. So, but I've never done it. I've gone up there on salmon trips. It looks like you caught a few salmon maybe. Mm-hmm. Or were you on the tail end of the run or something like that?
Yeah, we were kind of in the middle of a wave. They caught quite a few fish before we got there, and then they caught a bunch of fish after we left. But while we were there, we caught a lull, unfortunately. But we didn't.
Dang it.
You know, we hooked into a few. It was kind of fun. Sydney and I were trying to do it on a fly rod a little bit, and that made it a little more challenging. But still even tied into a few on the fly rods. And so it was good. It was kind of fun to do a little cast and blast. You don't get to do that as often as we'd like to. So it was cool. It was good to do both of those.
Yeah, exactly. That sounds like a lot of fun. But like you said, I feel like people go up there for the big game, you know, the bears and the caribou and all that stuff. I think we might be heading up there for some duck hunting. I'm looking forward to that because, like I said, I live so close and I've only been up there one time. You feel like I'd, you know, go up there all the time.
It's a logistical nightmare to get up to Alaska for sure. Like, there's a lot of steps, and it's not just a plane ride and a car trip somewhere. Like, you're fighting float planes and schedules and all kinds of stuff and weight issues and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. And hard for camera guys like you to pack all your camera gear to get in there or trying to get off float planes. And so there's obviously added elements that make it challenging. So there's a reason why you probably don't do it very often.
Yeah, exactly. It is. I've been on a few of those float planes too. And you go out into the most remote places that you can even imagine up there. It's absolutely beautiful country. It's absolutely insane. So I'm curious, what is it like ptarmigan hunting? Like, I've seen it in like the snow, but they look a little brown and stuff for the ones that I saw posted. So like, how do you even hunt those things?
Yeah, that's kind of fun. You just leave from the lodge, or we take the boats out and get away a little bit. But bring your binoculars. That helps. You can glass them up quite a little bit. They hang out on rocky faces quite a little bit. And on that open tundra, you can pick them out with your binoculars fairly well most of the time. They're in sizable coveys right now. They're starting to bunch up actually a little bit more than normal, which was different. Normally they're in small, like 6 to 8 group family groups, and now they're starting to kind of bunch up in their bigger groups of 50 sized flocks, which made it a little harder. But yeah, you just walk out there and sometimes you blindly flush them. Sometimes you can pick them up ahead of time to get to them. And they are brown on the ground, and they look quite brown, and they blend really well. But when they do fly, all their wings are white at this point. So it's a really cool visual when they flush and fly up there. It's kind of an explosion of white wings. And so it is kind of cool to see them come out of brown nothingness. And then all of a sudden you got a bunch of white feathers up in the air flying away from you. And with that Alaska wind, it proves some pretty challenging wing shooting at times.
Yeah, I could see that. Sounds kind of like grouse hunting to me a little bit. Yep. Kind of similar. Yeah.
Yep.
So you're the director of marketing for Browning, but I kind of wanted to dial back into the whole history of Rafe, man. Like, how'd you end up here? You know, did you grow up hunting big game or waterfowl or into firearms or anything like that? So let's dial it back a little bit and kind of get the history here.
Well, it's pretty straightforward, but pretty easy to tell. I grew up in a hunting family. We had a everything from ducks and geese and deer and elk and antelope and everything between. My dad was a big hunter, still is. And so, yeah, I just raised in that environment. We're here in Utah. I'm on the Great Salt Lake. We have a tremendous amount of duck hunting here. We try to keep it quiet. We don't want a lot of people coming to visit
us. I feel that.
We have some great duck hunting, a lot of public land. Grew up duck hunting. That's really where I spent most of my time, and so did quite a bit of it. And so I was raised in the hunting community, family that did it that way. And then from a professional standpoint, I had an opportunity to take an internship at Cabela's in Sydney, yeah. Nebraska, when I was in college, and then went over there and lived in Sydney, their headquarters for like 4 months or so during the internship, and was actually a writer for their website. So I wrote a lot of their technical writing for their products, and they did a lot of like gear reviews and buyer guides and all that kind of fun stuff. And because I was from Utah, I got all the assignments to do together with Browning products. So when Bell's was selling products, well, Browning products, the time I didn't work for us, they gave me those assignments. And so I'd call the office here and talk to folks, and then I'd write all that. So when I came back from that internship, finished the school, there was a job opening here at Browning for a copywriter. So I applied for it, and it's pretty helpful to have an resume build up of writing about Browning products for Cabela's.
Absolutely. So stacking on top of it.
I think I was a pretty easy hire, to be perfectly honest, as an entry-level employee writing copy, and I had writing experience about Browning products from a major customer of theirs. It was probably pretty easy hire, come to think of it. So that's how I got here. And I did a bunch of copywriting here for about a year. Then I moved over to project management, and I was a product manager. I did a bunch of our hunting apparel and accessories. I started our Dirty Burr, which is now our Wicked Wing waterfowl line. So that was all kind of came from my days there as a product manager running those types of projects. So did that for about 10 years, and then moved over to the marketing side. And that's where I've been for the last 10 plus years, whatever it's been. So been here for 22 years, I think, now.
Dang.
And so it's kind of nice to be on the marketing side. I've done it now for over 10 years, and it's been spot to be.
That's a lot of history there with that company. That's a long time. But I'm sitting here thinking, I was like, dang, I've been with Dive Bomb for like almost 9 years now, and I'm like, holy cow, dude, where does the time go? I can't even remember like when I started with them. It's crazy.
Yeah. Well, so I'll tell one other story real fast, because if anybody's seen on video, there's this picture right here. You can see it. That's me when I was 12 years old. And that picture is literally taken about 5 miles from our offices. And when I was 12, I was shooting the Browning BSS, so the old side-by-side shotgun.
Yeah.
And my dad told me that the Browning offices were there nearby, and I didn't believe him. So he drove us over here to this office, and there was a maintenance worker here, and he walked us through the offices when I was 12 years old.
Dang.
And so I remember just thinking to myself, that's where I want to work when I grow up. And so lo and behold, that all panned out. So that's why that picture sits in my office, is from that day that I remember actually coming here and getting a private tour that we probably should never have gotten.
But exactly.
I have that picture in my office now. It's kind of a reminder of where it started.
Of where everything started. That's actually absolutely awesome, man, to be sitting where you are now. And I'm sure you remember every single detail from that, you know, when you were a kid. Yeah, 100%. It kind of reminds me, like last night, I own a dog boarding facility also, and I had like a 10-year-old youth hunter who came in and said he watches all the Dive Bomb videos, and he was so excited to board his dog at the Dive Bomb guy's house, you know. And so I gave him just a big Dive Bomb care package when he left, a couple dog training tips, and you know, I'm sure that kid, you know, will probably remember that probably for the rest of his life, honestly. Taking that gear out into the field and getting to use it and all that. That's kind of what that reminded me of, just like starting so young, because I've been hunting since I was a kid, and I can remember the very first duck that I ever shot, because I'm a waterfowl hunter. I'm not a big game hunter at all. I've shot one black tail and one black bear, and I hung up my big game career.
That was it.
Yeah, yeah, that was it for me. But do you have any like memorable hunts from back in the day when you were younger that just kind of just stick with you, that kind of just got you hooked on everything?
Yeah, I mean, way back in, like, I have a very vivid memory one day. It was opening day of duck season. I was still way too young to hunt. But I remember my dad putting me on his shoulders and walking me through the marsh because I didn't have any waders on. And yeah, watching just that massive flight of birds on opening day, you know how they, we used to have an opener started like at noon. And so I remember just walking out there on his shoulders and looking up at that just massive flight of birds kind of being pushed off the marsh before a shooting started. And I mean, that was, I had to be what, 8 years old probably back then.
Jeez.
And that even that, it stuck with me from the standpoint of bird hunting. Like, I was hooked. Seeing all those kinds of birds at that early of an age was pretty memorable, and still kind of sticks in my head watching that. And so, yeah, like, so super early, yes. But, man, I've got lots of experiences out here. We've run airboats out here, run mud boats. We've hiked every public access place that's out here.
Yeah.
We've had some great days. We've had some terrible days. But, yeah, for sure, there's a lot of memories built out on that marsh.
Gosh, I bet. So would you say you're more of a big game hunter or a bird hunter?
You know, I was raised a bird guy, right? And so It's hard to break that. Going out and chasing elk and deer and bear and all the other fun stuff certainly has different perks, and is, I've learned to love that in its own right as well.
Yeah.
And certainly probably spend more time doing that now just in my capacity from a job standpoint. But when it boils right down to it, I still probably would call myself a duck hunter.
Dang. That's what I like to hear right there.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, you know, it's funny, you talk to folks and, you know, I traveled the world. I've been super, super lucky. And I've traveled all over the world to hunt, and mainly big game, obviously, when you do that kind of stuff. And I've done so many tremendously wonderful things. And I do, honestly, like, I still, to my core, I own more shotguns than I do rifles, for sure.
Yeah.
And I would still classify myself in that category if it really boiled down to it.
Dang. Yeah, I'm in the same boat. Like I said earlier, I tried big game and I got a few of them, but just nothing fires me up like a big old flock of ducks coming in. And that's pretty much, you know, what I've done my whole life. But you said you've hunted all over the world. Do you have, like, I wouldn't say like a top favorite, maybe you do have a top favorite one, hunt of all time, of just like mind blowing or just a crazy hunt or one of most memorable or anything, like, because I mean I've hunted all over the nation too, and
yeah,
you know, I it's hard for me to pinpoint an absolute favorite, but I'm sure you've got some just like crazy stories.
Yeah we do. I made a trip to Greenland for caribou and muskox, which was
dang
pretty wild to do a trip like that, a place that I never would have dreamt of ever going, was pretty wild. We did Spain this last year for ibex and mouflon sheep, which was pretty cool.
That's sweet.
Argentina, and I did Argentina for doves early on in my career, and that was spectacular. And I
did, honestly, you go through like 2,000 shells?
Yeah, I think our last day my total tally was like 2,500 shells or something.
Oh,
like,
my
that.
Goodness.
And so, yeah, so we've done all that. It's fun. And even recently, like, I did a trip, and it was on with the TV show Driven TV with Pat Nicole Reeve. Yep. And they took me over out of Juneau, and we were supposed to kill deer, black-tailed deer up there off of a yacht. And it's a super cool setup. We're coming out, they have a pretty good sea duck shoot. We were shooting scoters and stuff, and I gave up a lot of deer hunting days because I wanted to kill a Harley, and we couldn't quite get on one. And so we hunted a lot more than we should have for ducks than we did deer. I never did kill a deer, but I ended up killing a Harlequin on that trip. And
you did, and get
their,
one.
Their
That's
footage,
awesome.
It's, they got me pretty excited about whacking that one duck, and it was, I enjoyed that more than shooting deer, which I never did, so it was great.
Yeah, no, that ends up good. Harleys, so that reminds me, in Washington, we used to be, we could kill one Harley per resident or one per person per season, so you had one shot to kill one per season, and I unfortunately never did, and it's like 20 minutes from my house, and I'm like, oh my gosh. But the population started declining, so 3 years ago they took away our season, and I was like, are you kidding me? It's sitting in my backyard and I never shot one.
Never,
like, oh my god, so stupid. Yeah. And then so then it came back last year as a 38 tag draw. I didn't get one. And then this year was a 50 two and I still didn't get one. So now I'm sitting on this tag draw for Harleys. That just, you said Harley and that's what it reminded me of. And I'm like, gosh, dang it. I had my whole life to shoot this one Harley and I never did it. So now I'm sitting on it's almost like an emperor goose, you know, like up in Alaska, there's only 50 non-resident tags. I think it's gone now, but it's almost on the same caliber as that now. Like it's so rare. I don't know how many people apply for it, but it's sitting in my backyard and I just never did it. Now I'm just wishing I had a Harley sitting right here, right behind me.
Well, that is the joy of heading to Alaska, because they do have a few that you can tap into up there. That's definitely a target for anybody who's a real duck hunter. They got to go get one of those, because it was such a cool
bird. I think it's on the list for almost everybody to have one of those on their wall. But you said you're scoter hunting too. I kind of like scoter hunting. I'll go out there and do it. Like I'm mostly a field hunter, but if our fields are pretty empty, I'll just shoot over to the ocean and go shoot white wings and surf scoters and all that. It's pretty fun. I'd say it's pretty difficult shooting too, because they fly so low and so fast. You got to lead them like crazy. Yeah. And it's funny taking new guys out there, because they can't hardly hit them. And I think it's hilarious.
It's a great point, because you do learn real fast what lead looks like, because you do see your pattern hit 3 feet behind him every time. And then you have to kind of, you realize how far you have to lead a bird to kill him. And that's good practice when you see it in that environment, instead of shooting mallards up in the sky. You don't know what's happening. Yeah. But you pound on a bird's going across the water, you just get to see what your pattern is.
You're just like, I just shot 6 feet behind that thing. You're like, exactly. Oh my gosh. Yeah, it's crazy. So dabbling into Browning a little bit, you know, official partner sponsor of the travel series this year. Absolutely awesome. I know the guys have been loving their A5s, and Asher has the Maxis too. He loves that. And also the Silvers. They said they've just been loving them. I have a black A5 that I was shooting last year. Absolutely awesome. I love that. And I also have an old Belgian made, I think the stamp is 1928 16 gauge that I'll bring out, you know, like on those really special like dry days. I don't want it to get all messed up. I mean, it's in immaculate condition. And I'm sure, do you have any of those old guns in your collection at all?
I don't have really old ones. I have Belgian made 12s, 20s, and 16s.
Yeah,
I bought myself, and the only old gun I have is my grandfather's. He had a Winchester 97, which was a Browning design. So I have that old gun. But yeah, I have Belgian guns. They weren't family heirlooms by any means. But I picked them up over the years.
Yeah, I have an older guy that I hunt with that gifted me this Browning, and it's like one of the most special things that I own in my safe, and it's so old. I'm shocked that like that design, it's almost 100 years old, the one that I own, and I'm like, this thing still shoots immaculately. Like I'm folding with this thing, and it's just crazy. It's mind-blowing to me that I'm holding such an old gun and still hunting, you know, in modern day. Like I'm just like a fiend for those old guns. I'll look at them, you know, in the consignment sections in all the local sports stores. And I kind of want to get an older 12 and put synthetic stock on it and Cerakote it to make it like old, but a little bit modern, you know, for a daily gun. I think that'd be, I've always wanted to do that. I might do that this year, kind of before the season, but man, those old A5, I know they're like a crowd favorite. Everybody loves them. Like they're undeniable.
They're pretty special old guns. And I just watched the Final Cut. We're doing a new series. It'll come out here in the next day or two. We're going to do a whole video on the 2 millionth A5 that we produced.
Oh, geez.
It's a really cool story. We've got the gun in house, and there's a cool story that involves Richard Nixon and Elvis Presley and the Smithsonian and Nazis. And I mean, it's a wild little story that they put together on that gun. But we just went through a whole project on the old Auto 5. And so it was kind of cool to go through all that old history and know that, you know, and I talk about this frequently is, you know, there's those old guns that are out there. They're classics. They're, you know, from John Browning himself. And you look at our catalog today of how many guns we still have in our catalog that are either from his designs or are still made up from the DNA of those designs. And it's incredible though how long those designs and those principles have lasted throughout time that are still very applicable today.
Yeah, absolutely. That's kind of something I wanted to get into of like how much it's changed, but like what's still similar, you know, in the lineup. So do you have some like specific ones you could say that are pretty much like along that?
Yeah, I mean, so the obvious one is the A5. So the new version we introduced in 2012, it's not the same gun, right? But it still has that the humpback design, which was his original design. The reason for that, you know, his was functionally, and now we look at it and there are ways of building it differently, but even having that longer sight plane, having kind of a block in front of you for those that want to walk out anything around you in the longer sight plane. So the A5, even the old humpback design itself from him, still lives obviously in the newer design, and it is a big deal. And then we look at the rest of our catalog. The BAR is still in the line. Obviously, it's changed and modernized into a sporting gun, but that's a genesis from him. The Satori itself came from the Superpost, and there's not a ton of difference in those two designs as they modified it from, you know, his own children and grandchildren modified that one. And there's a lot that goes back to that. The BL, the SA-22 is his design, still in our line. And so there's quite a bit. And then you go into even into the Winchester line, and I think this is even the most interesting part, is the Winchester repeating arms side of the business. You know, he sold all of his patents to Winchester back in his early days. We're still building 1885s, Model 94s, Model 92s, Model 90s. All of those still in production from the original design back in the 80s, right? And so nobody gets to claim that we're still operating on our founder's designs. And it's a huge testament to the legacy he built and the legacy we've got to continue to build and work on.
Absolutely. That is kind of mind-blowing, actually, thinking about that. And I was going to ask you, like, what's it like working for such a legacy brand? You know, it's like over 140 years old, and that's just crazy. I can't even fathom. That's nuts. I'm sure it's built into, like, you know, the vibe of the company and stuff like that, like feeding off all of that. It's got to be.
It is. Honestly, this is the greatest company to work for. And I'm obviously biased in that, but honestly, I think it goes to show, from a standpoint of like the longevity of our employees, we have a long list of employees who have been here, and every year we retire folks out that have been here 30, 40, 50 years of employment here. And it shows, you know, how well we treat our employees, what the environment is like to work here, how people are dedicated to this brand and the work that we do. And we have, you know, I've been here for 22 years, and to be honest, I still feel like a rookie here because of how many people are still been here longer than I've been here.
Yeah, you're talking to somebody, they're like, I've been here for 40 years. And you're like, oh my gosh.
Yep. It's crazy. So I just now kind of crossed the threshold of feeling like I belong and I'm kind of a veteran here. And we just hired, I think, one of our first couple employees that were born after I started working here. And that hurt a little bit. But then I realized when I started working here, there were people here that were working here before I was born too. So so we got a long list, and so the legacy is deep, it's long, people love being here, we treat everybody well. It's a great legacy brand. It makes it easy that it's been built off such a great foundation.
100%
the products make it easy. We have such a great product line that our jobs are easy, to be perfectly honest with you. We enjoy being here, we have a lot of fun, and we work hard, and we're keeping up a business that means something to people. It's we're not building computer chips, and we're not selling trinkets and all that kind of stuff. Like, we're building something that people make memories with. It is part of their family heritage, how they're happy. We always say, like, we build products that when people use them, they're happy people. And that's kind of cool. Not a lot of people get to say that.
Absolutely. It's totally awesome, you know? Yeah, like a grandpa handing down an old Browning gun or something like that. Or like, we might buy like my new A5 that I have. My kid might have it someday, and it just keeps going and going and going, you know? Yep. That's crazy to think about. And I know a couple of my little cousins just got their uncle's older A5, like classic one too. They're hyped about that. Just awesome, awesome to think about. And like you said, like, same with us at Dive Bomb, you know, like our marketing team that we have just feels like like a brotherhood, and we travel around a lot. Like, we spend a lot of time with each other, filming, talking every single day, working all kinds of hours of the day, and making products, you know, that people can kill stuff over and be comfortable in, and all kinds of stuff like that. So, you know, because I've been on this marketing team for, yeah, like almost 8 years now. And what we've done in the last 8 years has just been pretty crazy to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. You guys definitely build a brand and have a following that it's kind of risen from almost nothing to a pretty major organization. I was out there for your Squat Fest this summer and saw the opening of your new storefront, all yeah. of that. It's quite the business that's been built there, and you guys need to be commended for what you've created for sure. It's an impressive that, man. Organization. Yeah.
Dang, I wish I would have ran into you at Squad Fest. I was so busy walking around. There's so many people there, dude. It was hard to keep up with. Yeah, it was a good time, though.
Yeah, there it was a busy place. Great, yeah, great opening for you guys.
It was hopping. It was an awesome grand opening for us, for sure. Now, it's cool that, you know, that storefront is open to everybody now. So anybody in the area can go in there and shop and see the new place. And, you know, if Cody's in there, he might give you a tour in the back and see the whole entire facility, you know.
Right. Yep.
It's been cool to see the expansion. Yeah, because I've been with Dive Bomb since they made like a silhouette and a goose sock and one jacket. Now it's crazy.
Yeah.
I know Asher was saying that he was using the A5 on some geese. People are starting to hunt in September, dude. It's that good time of year, you know.
It's funny how September 1 rolls around and everything kind of mentally changes. At least it does for me.
100%.
I pulled out shotguns. Well, we were in Alaska shooting ptarmigan, so I was already kind of in the mood. But
yeah,
still September 1, I grabbed the Satori and went after doves on September 1, Monday morning. So everything's changed. I put away my golf clubs. I put away the fishing boat. Like, I'm done. We're hey, now.
Summer can it's get in September. Out of here.
Yep, we're hunting for sure. For sure. It's definitely a mental change now.
Absolutely. I love the September vibe. You can just feel it, dude. Everyone, you know, everyone's starting to hunt. Like, I'm scouting for geese. Our opener isn't till September 6th, so this Saturday. Yep. And we get the 6th through the 14th. So I have like a 7 or 8 day window to just harass as many geese as I can.
Yeah.
But it's just like, I don't know, it feels like Christmas morning to me, you know, on that first opening day, you're laying in the layout blind and hear the geese coming and loading up a shotgun. And I'll tell you, one of my favorite things that I've loved, like I've always loved this about Browning, is that speed load.
Yeah.
I love that feature so much.
It's amazing how often you find out you need it and use it.
Exactly. Like, you're boom, 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 3 empty. It's so fast. Like, it's so fast. And I can't rave about it enough. I show it to everyone because a lot of people, for some reason, still don't know about it. Like, my friends, I'm like, hey, check this out. Boom. And it shoots in. They're like, how'd you do that?
It's a great feature. And like I said, you don't realize how often you use it till you have one. And all of a sudden, it becomes second nature to float that way and to have that quick fourth round.
Yeah, exactly. You can slide it in so fast, and you got a honker sliding out on like the left side or something. Boom, slide that in and smash him. But when did that feature come into play? Has it been around for a long time?
Since the Auto 5. One of the most original designs, and we kept it through the Auto 5, went into the Gold, and we had the Gold shotgun, and rolled it right into the Maxxis and the new A5. So yeah, it's a long, long-term feature we've had on those guns.
Long time. What would you say your favorite gun in the entire lineup is?
Man, that's a terrible question to ask. That's just absolutely awful, right? When it boils down to it, like, I have an affection for Satoris.
Yeah.
Molten Nuggers. So I try to pick up a few of those every time I can. But when it comes down to like a workhorse, again, I honestly go back and forth between the Maxxis and the A5. So I had the opportunity to be pretty involved in the Maxxis design.
Yeah.
Or at least kind of the rollout of it. So I was pretty fond of it. And then when we did the A5, I was a little more skeptical because it wasn't quite the same as the old original gun. And
true.
When I got shooting it, I think I'd probably end up gravitating to the A5 more than the Maxxis on a day-to-day basis. But I try to rotate in back and forth between the two. So I kind of keep up on both of them. They look different. They feel different when you shoot them. But I tended to shoot them both probably equally as But I do like them both. I really can't pick a favorite, to be perfectly honest.
Yeah, like having my, I don't have a Maxis. I've always wanted one. Like, they always catch my eye. I just love them. But with my A5, I have a 12, but I feel like I need an A5 and a 20, and it'd just be like money. Because I went to a 20 gauge for like a daily gun last year for the first time. I don't think I can go back, honestly. those 20 gauges for shooting ducks are just like, I love it. I love 20 gauge.
Yeah.
But it's been awesome.
It's been a good add-on for us. We really like it. They're great. Everybody is shocked, and I was shocked too, how lightweight they are. I mean, just tremendously lightweight. That's what we were packing on the tundra in Alaska, and it was remarkable being out there in that kind of harder environment in terms of walking and paying attention.
Absolutely.
It was wonderful to have something that lightweight. So when you just put that into a more controlled environment, you know, it just becomes a natural tool. You're not fighting it. It's easy to shoot at the end of the day. You're not tired. So I've learned to love that cool 20 gauge too. It made a big difference, and it'll find its way in the duck blind this year, I'm sure, for me.
It's gotta. Has to.
Yep.
Well, even for us, because all the fields that we hunt are pretty wet and sloppy, and we get a ton of rain, so we can't drive in. We don't have the luxury of driving in. We're packing in like 400 yards in shin-deep mud, so it's nice having, you know, our silhouettes and like a lighter weight gun as like a 20 or something, because like I've tried to reduce weight, you know, as much as possible, because I'm going to be gassed when I just walk 500 yards through mud to set up 80 dozen decoys to shoot a duck. You know?
It matters. Like, we all laugh about it, but it does matter when you have a lighter load to take in, and the fact that, you know, you got a light gun and lightweight decoys and you can get into it, it makes a difference. It really does.
It absolutely does. It totally does. And on the rifle side, what would you think your favorite rifle is?
We've built such a list of X-Bolts now. We just did the X-Bolt 2 last year and introduced the X-Bolt 2.
Yeah.
And that platform's just, I mean, that's completely changed the profile of our company, to be perfectly honest.
Yep.
We've always been known as a shotgun company and did a decent job at rifles, the old A-Bolt.
Yeah.
The X-Bolt was a big change for us. Now the X-Bolt 2, it really has changed the dynamics of our entire company to build us into a legitimate rifle company as well as shotgun company. And so any of those X-Bolt 2s now are wonderful, gravitate to some of our carbon fiber stocks just through the weight transfer. And again, trying to run as light as possible along here in the West. We have a lot of mountains. So it's not like we're just climbing in tree stands and pack a heavier gun all the time. But
exactly.
So I just gravitated that. But yeah, any of the X-Bolts have been just wonderful. It's probably the reason why I've learned to like big game hunting as much as I have. It's just because of the equipment and the ease and enjoyment of it.
Absolutely. So do you have anything new or exciting coming in the shotgun world for 25, 2026 coming? Anything that you can say online coming?
Yeah, I'd have to kill you if I told you about 26 products, but we spent most of our time in 24 and 25 launching the X-Bolt 2 and the Satori 825. And so we don't have anything new in 25 for A5 or Maxis, but there's always stuff on the docket for 26 and 27 coming out.
Yeah, baby.
And that's going to be here in no time, actually. So yeah, stay tuned for January for any of the new intros for that.
New releases coming. Yeah, like I have so much stuff that I could say, but I'm not allowed to. So
one of the hard parts about coming. Yeah, one of the hard parts about being in the office is, you know, I get to see all the guns that could have been or would have been or should have been.
Yeah.
And it's really frustrating to walk down to the product manager offices or our R&D department and look at all the cool stuff that are working on, going, what are we going to, when? And, you know, it's late for this reason or
exactly.
We don't have room for it or whatever it is. But it's fun to see just stacks of innovation that exist out there and trying to find when and where we can put them into play. It's kind of fun. It's kind of a little chess game of when we can get products in the line. But man, there's no shortage of ideas from those guys.
Yeah.
Those stories are really cool, innovative technologies and cool stuff that's out there. We're just waiting for the right time to roll it out.
Yeah, man, I feel that to the core. Yeah. I'll show up in Missouri at the headquarters and go into our engineer Tommy's office. I'm like, hey, when do we make this? He's like, oh, that'll be out in a year or two. And I'm like, yeah, gosh, hey, I need it right now, dude.
Yep. Yeah. That's the hard part about being on the inside is you know all the could have beens and should have beens and should have beens, right?
So. Exactly. And yeah, you just wait for the go ahead to start pushing it and you just get excited about it. So you do, as we do too, a lot of traveling and a lot of filming. Do you ever take time to just like turn the cameras off and just hunt just because you love it?
I do. And I make a point to it.
I think that's necessary.
To be perfectly honest, is if I did this just for work purposes, you know, I'd have plenty to hunt and I would have. But at the end of the day, the honest truth of it is I'd still prefer just to go out and hunt on my own. On Monday for doves, it was just me. I just threw my gun in the truck and went for a walk and shot a few doves, and it wasn't even all that great of a hunt. But I thoroughly enjoyed just getting out and doing it for myself. And I cherish those days, even ones that aren't successful in terms of shooting stuff. Yeah. And doing it on my own, do it myself. And now, even more so, bringing my kids up and having them be involved and hunting and shooting. Like, you definitely don't do that for work purposes. That's nothing but personal time. And
absolutely,
that has turned into be far more fulfilling and enjoyable than I ever thought it would be.
Yeah.
Watching all three of my kids kind of gravitate to it and finding their own little niche and world in the hunting community, and they're doing great, and it's fun to watch. Take that.
That's
now.
Exciting. I bet you it brings you back to, you know, when you were a kid running around with dad, you know?
Yep.
It's got to.
Yeah. Yeah. So we actually, like, my kid, my oldest, he's 16 now, but when he was younger, we hung my first set of deer antlers in his room. I said, you could hang these in your room until you kill your first one.
Yeah.
And then we moved to his younger sister, who's now 13, and she's killed. So her first set are in her room now. Now it's at my youngest, my little 9-year-old. It's in her room now, waiting for her to kill her first buck. Then I get to reclaim my first deer and put it back in my room.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, that sounds exciting. I just had a baby. We have she's almost 4-month-old, a daughter, but you know, just I'll sit there at night and just think, like, is she gonna, hopefully she likes hunting, you know, her dad's career is hunting. I hope she likes it one day, and maybe, you know, get to share those same things and maybe have a son and a daughter duo. I mean, we're gonna have multiple, but still, like, it never crossed my mind, because being a dad, it just wasn't in my mind until it happened. And now I'm like, wow, I have to raise, you know, a child now, and hopefully she likes what I like. I mean, you can't force them to, but like you saying, you're bringing your kids hunting. I just hope one day I can do that with mine, but she's only 4 months old. So I got a long time to go, but it's exciting.
Yeah. Get her out now. Like my two oldest, they gravitated to it pretty early. I'm pretty excited about it. My youngest, my little 9-year-old, she was a little cold. And I'd get her to shoot and a little bit, and I'd take her hunting, and she'd come along, and she wasn't all that thrilled about it, to be honest. And that was kind of hard to watch and be a part of. But this last summer, we took her out prairie dog hunting, and she shot her first prairie dog and shot a jackrabbit. And that has changed. She is a changed person from a month ago when we did this. It is all about, she came down downstairs the other day and wanted to look through all my knives and the hunting clothes that she could wear and what she could be put in for that. So having some success made a big difference for her.
Yeah.
So she's now fully on board, which is kind of fun to see.
That's
somebody
cool.
being a little quiet about it to experiencing it. And I think that's a big part of it. They have to experience it. They've got to be able to have those experiences and learn firsthand instead of just watching it. When she pulled the trigger, it changed her, and it was kind of really fun to watch. And
that's cool. Yeah. Flip the switch on.
Huge difference. Huge difference.
Yeah. I got a couple little cousins. One's a sophomore in high school. One's a seventh grader, and they'll come duck hunting with me. I'll go duck hunting with them a few times, but I told them, you know, I wasn't going to take them on one of our big monster hunts right away. I was like, you gotta earn this one and kind of, you know, get used to, you know, the whole flow of everything, and then I'll take you on a big one. And so they earned it. We went on a couple hunts, a couple bad ones, a couple decent ones. And I was like, all right. And then we went out and shot like 100 widgets. It's fun.
Then,
it's
then
fun
you spoil them
with those younger guys, dude. Like they're so like amped up and so excited to be out there. And you know, I don't get, I get kind of numb to it, you know, because it's our career. We do it so often, but you still get fired up. But to see like a 15, 14 year old kid through his eyes again, I'm like, dude, it just brings me right back to those days when all I wanted to do was just beg my dad, you know, to take me out to the ditch so I could go jump a mallard.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you forget, like, it doesn't take a lot, right? You don't have to have just a barn burner of a day for a 12, 14, 16 year old, 18 year old kid to really enjoy the time. That they've never done this, right? They don't know what it's like to burn down a flock and and just stack them up with a bunch of guys, right? Like, they don't know. Mm-hmm. So they shoot 2, 3, 4, 5 birds.
Oh, and it's the greatest thing.
They have a great
ever.
Day, right? And sometimes I forget that when I take my kids that they only need one or two, and they're good. And that's important to remember. And snacks. You got to bring snacks. That's the important
too. Part. Yeah, I feel like that'd be pretty important.
It's important for us as adults too.
Yeah, exactly. What's your go-to blind snack?
Oh, sunflower seeds. That's the
dang. I haven't heard that one yet.
Yeah, grab a Mountain Dew with some sunflower seeds, and then you can make it a long time in the duck blind.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm more of a monster and like a Slim Jim kind of dude.
Yeah, yeah. Man, it's important to make that stop at the gas station before you go. That's a big part of that, dude.
You have to. My whole morning feels off if we don't do it, or I'll do it the night before. But if I don't have like a something to sip on and something to munch on while I'm laying there, I just feel so out of my element, dude. It's just a right in the waterfowl world, you know.
I think you're right. That's how I feel about it. Like,
it's so true, man. That's awesome. I think the guys next are going up to Canada this week, maybe, and they. Yeah, like I said, they've been loving their Browning shotguns and
Asher sent me some videos. Yeah, earlier this week.
Yeah, yeah, he sent me a video of him tripling up on some geese, but I didn't believe him.
Gotta have it documented.
Yeah, exactly. I was like, "You sure that's you?" I was like, "I think somebody sniped that second one before you got it," because he always claims how good of a shot he is. He thinks he's the best shot ever, and I'm like, "Man, I can give you a run for your money for sure. I'm either really good or really bad."
Yeah, it is. It's one of the two, isn't it? Every time.
I'm sure you feel it too. Some days you feel like you can shoot something at 80, and then other days you can't hit anything within 15 yards.
Yeah, we all have those days for sure.
Yep, that's true. Well, any new, I already asked you that, new exciting stuff, any videos, content coming, anything like that that people can look forward to?
Yeah, I think the one is that 2 millionth A5 video that we got coming out, I think will be really exciting.
Yeah.
We have our sales meeting here at the end of September. We'll introduce all of our new products. I think September 24th, 25th, something like that. So be updated on that and see some announcements there. Certainly at SHOT Show timeframe in January, be paying attention because I think we have a pretty big year coming up at SHOT Show in January. Lots to look forward to there. And then obviously plenty of content on our Instagram, our Facebook, 100%. YouTube pages, website. Like we've always got stuff that we're grinding out there, and I'm pretty proud of our work and the stuff we're doing. So I'd say pay attention all the time.
Heck yeah. Good content coming out of Browning. Do you have any just like personal hunts you're excited for, or maybe just getting out with the kids or something?
Yeah, I've got a pretty good elk hunt coming up here in a couple of weeks to go do. And then my wife has a deer tag this year that we'll go down and hunt some old family stomping grounds for her. That'll be fun. And then my dad, he's 83 years old now. He's got a deer tag. So he's still getting after it. So I got to go figure out how to get him on a deer sometime in October. So I'm looking forward to that more than just about anything.
That's awesome. That sounds like a lot of fun coming. I know my friends will, it's kind of a little hot right now, but they'll start black bear hunting pretty soon. And I don't really do it with them, but I always wait for the phone call, you know, to come drag one out with them. It's something I always look forward to. You know, I like when I get the, you know, bear down, let's go get him. And I'm like, yes, let's go. I tell my wife, I'm like, see ya. I gotta go help the boys drag a bear out.
Yeah.
But like I said, dude, it's just that September early season hype. People are killing doves, geese, teal. I saw a couple bull elk get shot already, you know, and the opener was yesterday or 2 days ago on Monday. And it's just that time of the year, man. You just got to get excited. And I know all the listeners are itching to get out there and really appreciate you coming on, man. It's exciting to see what's coming from Browning and hear a little bit on the inside info on it. And hopefully you have a great and successful season, man. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thanks for having me. We're looking forward to a good year. Shaping up to be good. Duck numbers report came out yesterday, I think.
That's true. Yeah,
they did. Looks okay. Looks like we got to have a pretty good year. And
pretty decent.
So, yeah, we're excited to get going. It's time now, and hopefully I got all my work organized enough that I can slip out a few times and hit the marks a little more often than I did last year.
Heck yeah, I feel that. Well, thanks for listening, guys, and we'll catch you on the next one.